Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing good. Jasmine, it's been a long time since this show.
I know.
With just the two of us.
Yeah, we're kind of back to normal after a long time,
yeah.
I guess. It's been a while.
I mean, you're leaving next week, so...
Right. I'm gone again.
We're back to weird stuff. But, you know, for today, we have a show that will be like all of the many other episodes of My Old Kentucky Podcast you've heard before. Today, Jasmine and I are going to be talking about several topics. I'm going to give an update about the Medicaid waiver, which the Bevin administration updated recently, last week. And Jasmine is going to talk to us a little bit about Allison Leonard and Grimes. This story's been in the news for a little bit, but we wanted to talk about it on our show. Then we will be giving an update on the 6th Congressional District race for 2018. There's a couple of candidates who we wanted to bring to your attention, one of which who's declared and one of which who may declare soon. And then lastly, we have a short interview with Brandon Mims of Covington, Kentucky, who will be talking to us about the rally with Senator Sanders that took place in Covington, Kentucky on Sunday. So without any further ado, Jasmine, are you going to talk about Medicaid?
Yes.
I'm always ready to talk about
I know,
about
you're
Medicaid.
Always ready to talk healthcare.
Yeah, so back in May, we had an episode, My Old Kentucky Podcast episode, diving deep into healthcare issues in Kentucky. We had some great guests, Kara Stewart and Dustin Pugel, talked to us a lot about healthcare in Kentucky. But one of the issues we raised that we discussed during that show was the 1155 waiver that the Bevin administration submitted to CMS that, if approved, would make significant changes to the way Medicaid works in Kentucky. So, Jasmine, as a reminder, the Beshear administration expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act.
That's right.
Which made Medicaid available to every person up to 133% of the poverty line, in some cases 138% of the poverty line. A lot of times there's restrictions on who gets Medicaid. You know, sometimes it's children. Sometimes you have to have a dependent child. A lot of times they cut out single people, especially single men. The Medicaid expansion under the ACA made Medicaid available to everyone up to the 133% of the poverty line, regardless of whatever. You just had to declare that your state was taking the money from the federal government to do this. But once Matt Bevin was elected, he submitted a waiver, this 1155 waiver, to CMS, the group that administers Medicaid, to say, we want to make some significant changes to the way the program is administered in Kentucky. We want to include a premium, like a small premium, that, you know, we just want people to take some responsibility. Then they said, you know, we wanted to make it so that you had to have work requirements, you had to at least do some kind of work, or you had to volunteer some to get this benefit. And there were several other changes to make it so that they said that you would have a little bit more dignity while you took this money from the federal government. That was what they said. But, you know, after they submitted this, time went on, and they have made some changes. They made some updates to the waiver last week. So these changes, experts say, would reduce the enrollment in the Medicaid program by about 9,000 people, and there were three big changes in the waiver that they listed, one of which makes those work requirements for able-bodied adults tougher. The way that it was going to work in the old waiver that they originally submitted, there was going to be a five-hour-a-week volunteer or work requirement that gradually grew to 20 hours the longer you were on the program. The new waiver that they submitted requires a static 20 hours a week. So if you are a quote-unquote able-bodied adult, if you are on Medicaid, you have to have 20 hours a week of work or volunteering to continue being eligible for Medicaid.
That is a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
I have, so in being a criminal defense attorney for minor charges, a lot of people get ordered to do community service or volunteer work as part of their consequences for charges. Getting people to do 20 hours of volunteer work is really hard.
Like a week, too. Not just like...
Right. So most of the time, judges give them a couple months, and most people don't get it done.
Wow.
Or a lot of people don't. I won't say most. A lot of people don't get it done just because of a lot of things. Transportation. They can't take time off work if they do have a job. Transportation is a huge issue. Some places don't have available work for people to do. Like, that's really difficult.
You're a criminal defense attorney in an urban area where there at least is a bus to get from place to place.
Right.
And you're thinking about, like, poor people in far-off rural counties where there's not a lot going on. I mean, how do you do
and
community
how
service?
How many places do they even have that would offer it?
Right.
You know, and That's crazy to me.
Yeah, so that's but that's what the waiver will have, is a 20-hour a week requirement that you either work or volunteer.
And I have a question. What is able-bodied adults? Do you have to like prove that you're on disability?
I think that yes. So Medicaid, the Medicaid program, you gain eligibility through several different ways. And you still, there's like the, this is only for people in the bigger expansion of Medicaid, which was mostly to able-bodied adults. I think most people who had a disability were already covered under Medicaid. So
right.
this is just people who would fall into the expansion.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know, there may be some disabled people who fell into the expansion. I don't know how that would work, but I think for people who are disabled, you still have Medicare. And I think like SSDI would like disability insurance.
Right. I feel like there are always people that are trying to get disability though that
right.
haven't been approved yet or
yeah.
have been denied. And
yeah, that's a good
kind
point.
Of the people I'm wondering
and
about.
And if you,
I
yeah,
guess.
If you're trying to, if you're in the process of getting disability.
Because that can be a really long process.
Right. Well, that kind of ties into the second big change that they had, which is that the waiver now disenrolls beneficiaries who file, quote, intentionally fraudulent actions, unquote, for 6 months. So if you do one of these intentionally fraudulent actions, you are disenrolled from the program and you cannot re-enroll for 6 months.
So what's an intentionally fraudulent action?
So it's a lot of things. It does include failing to timely report changes in income and or employment, or falsely reporting community engagement or employment hours. So if you lose your job, or to if you have a change in income, if you have a raise or something, and you don't report that immediately to the proper authorities, you could, you know, lose your Medicaid. I mean, I would assume this would be people who would be put out of the tier. Like if you got a better job, or if you got a raise at your job, and then you went out of being able to get Medicaid based on your income, you'd be locked out for 6 months. So if you lost that job, or you know, if your pay was somehow changed to be lower, you would still be locked out.
Still be locked out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I don't really know. I read a lot of the waiver, but I don't think there was any language around like what timely reporting means. But you know, this is a pretty stringent requirement for people who are on Medicaid to stay on top of their paperwork all the time. And I'm sure that there also will be some errors where it's like, no, I filed it. And they're like, no, you didn't. You lose your Medicaid. And then you're filing
right.
more paperwork. And at the same time, you're not able to go to the doctor, even though you're sick. And yeah, that just can cause a lot of headache and really maybe some serious health problems for people who may lose their insurance based on, you know, just paperwork getting lost in the shuffle. So, Jasmine, I said there were three changes. The third provision regards something called presumptive eligibility. It wasn't a big deal. I actually sent Dustin Pugel a message and I was like, hey man, do you know what this is? And he was like, I didn't spend a lot of time reading that. Well, he didn't. He spent plenty of time reading it, but Dustin was like, the other two are way more important. So I'm not really quite sure what presumptive eligibility meant.
Okay.
And it didn't seem like he was busy. He didn't explain the other one to me. So I'm not quite sure. I think so. Presumptive eligibility in other states is basically like if you haven't bothered to file for Medicaid and you get pregnant. And you show up at the hospital and you're like, I'm pregnant. And they're like, do you have Medicaid? And you say, no, and I don't have any other insurance. They say, well, we're going to presume you eligible. We're going to presume that you have eligibility so we can go ahead and bill Medicaid for this while the paperwork is being filed. And that's what presumptive eligibility means in other states. I'm not sure what the changes they're making in Kentucky based on this waiver. So this waiver, like I said, experts expect that it would remove about 9,000 people from the Medicaid rolls in Kentucky. And on the other end of it, they expect to increase the amount of savings by the state by about $27 million after 5 years. So about a little bit more than $5 million a year, $5 million a year that these changes would save the state. That's the payoff that they'd make. 9,000 people having health care for $5 million. So there you go. The waiver will have two public hearings. The first is on July 14th in Somerset, and the second one is on July 17th in Frankfurt. Both are between 10 and noon, so if you work, you are SOL, you know. There you go.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe going to this and protesting can count as your community service for when the waiver goes through. So what do you think, Jasmine?
It's so bad. I'm really like it was. I just keep getting more and more sad about the state of healthcare in our country and in Kentucky. But the waiver was bad already. But now this volunteer work requirement and the second one, the intentionally fraudulent actions requirement, that just seems so difficult.
Yeah. It just seems like making it harder for people who don't have much to get anything. You know, these are the people who are on Medicaid are underemployed or unemployed people. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's people that abuse the system, but geez, it's like a lot of people that are being kicked off because you think that, you know, some people are taking advantage of something. But this is such an important program that people depend upon for their health, depend upon for basically to stay alive in many instances. A lot of the people who are on Medicaid are the sickest people among us, and
right,
they don't really have much to stay healthy. So the process here is that this goes to CMS in Washington, D.C. CMS is being administered by Seema Verna, I think is her name. She used to be a consultant that helped a lot of conservative states, including Kentucky, draw up their Medicaid waivers. So it looks likely, in my mind, that it would be approved. It will probably then be challenged in court. So long way to go before this goes into place. But yeah, the system that we're building does not seem to be very Kentuckian friendly. Okay, Jasmine, tell us a little bit about Allison Lundergan Grimes.
All right. So first off, Donald Trump has created a voter fraud commission. So this is some national politics, but it involves Kentucky's own Allison Lundergan Grimes,
the Secretary of State.
Right. So Trump has created this voter fraud commission, and he has made a broad request for voter registration information. And our Secretary of State, ALG, has refused to comply, and she's made national news because of it. She's been on MSNBC, CNN, NPR, and others, I believe, to talk about her refusal. She's done it in an interesting way. She's made some real goofy, like, Kentucky jokes on these national news outlets. Like, there's not enough bourbon in Kentucky to make this request seem sensible. And she also said that this commission is about as welcoming as a breeze off an outhouse.
Did you laugh at these, Jasmine?
No.
I didn't laugh either.
And the outhouse one, it's like, well, we have indoor plumbing. Like, don't make us sound
right.
backwards as people already think we are.
Yeah.
But she did say it was a quote from her grandmother. So I don't know. She also said, not on my watch are we going to be releasing sensitive information that relates to the privacy of individuals. And not on my watch are we going to be turning over something that's left for states to run. Elections are left to our states under the 10th Amendment. So she believes that this would be a 10th Amendment violation to turn over this information to the federal government. But just a little bit more on this commission. The request for information came from the commission's vice chairman, who is also a Secretary of State from Kansas, but he supports very strict voter ID laws. And he sent out the request in the form of a letter that was sent to all 50 state secretaries of state. So that's how Allison Lundergan Grimes received it. I think the letter also asked for feedback on how to run their elections, how to prevent voter fraud, all of these things, but it also requested information from registered voters, like social security number, names, addresses, voting history, party affiliation, all of this information. So the commission was created to investigate voter fraud. And if you'll remember, Donald Trump made claims of widespread illegal voting, and that's why he lost the popular vote.
That's what he thinks, right?
Right. But there's never been any data to back up those claims. So I guess that is what he's looking for with this voter fraud commission. So we know that at least 24 other states have refused to comply with that request as well. But it's really been Allison Lundergan Grimes who's been making the news and talking about it. And she also compared it to a gun registry.
Right.
Which Republicans have opposed. Like, you all should be opposed to this if you oppose a gun registry.
Right.
So I don't really know what to think about this.
Why she's been so far out in the public talking about this?
Right. I mean, I feel like she's been on a different news outlet every day. She's been on some of them more than once.
Right.
I'm not sure. So just a little bit about her future. I believe she's term limited.
Yes. She's this
in 2019.
This will be the end of her second term as Secretary of State. And I mean, when she first ran for Secretary of State, I remember that a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, she's the future of the Democratic Party in Kentucky. Not too long into her Secretary of State tenure, she ran for U.S. Senate and got absolutely demolished.
Right. If most people, I'm sure you'll remember, she got stomped.
Yeah. She ran, you know, she ran against Mitch McConnell, and a lot of people had high hopes for her.
Right.
And the last time, and that Mitch McConnell ran, you know, the time before when he was up for election. Bruce Lunsford ran against him.
Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of people had high hopes for Bruce Lunsford. And it turned out that Bruce Lunsford did better than Allison Lindgren Grimes.
Right.
And there's a lot of evidence that politics is getting to be more and more national, and people tend to kind of support the statewide candidates that they support for president. So, you know, that's something to be said. But what her future is once the statewide elections come up in 2019 is something that is interesting. I think that, to me, this points to the fact she's probably going to run for something new.
Right. Trying to get her name out there.
Right.
Be so, in the public again.
I've heard she might run for attorney general's office because Andy Beshear is also term limited. Nope, he's not. He can run for another term of attorney general, but he may run for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Or she may run for governor. I've heard a lot of people say that she might run for the 6th congressional district, which is her next topic. And I don't know. It could be that she's also seeking kind of a national appointment to something. She may be searching for like maybe something having to do with public policy, women in public policy, Southern women in public policy. You know, there's a lot of there's a lot of options that she has, but I think that she kind of wants to make a mark somewhere before she goes that direction. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think it seems like she's just trying to get herself back in the public again. It's been kind of quiet, since she lost her race against Mitch McConnell. She's definitely spoke at a lot of different events and everything. You know, she spoke at the Bernie Sanders rally when he was here with Tom Perez. But I don't know what her future is. I don't know what she might run for. And I don't really know how it would be received if she does run.
Yeah, and I think she's trying to trying to carve out an identity as somebody who's opposed to certain things that Trump does. And it's a tough line to walk. I think that she's doing a good job right now of kind of being like, this is the thing that I think is bad. I'm not going to send your data to the national government, which is kind of a small government democratic solution. That's kind of checks boxes that are important for Kentuckians. But one of the issues with Allison Lindgren Grimes has always been, you know, what are the reasons she wants to be elected to something? What she want to accomplish? And what is she doing when she gets elected to things? And, you know, up until she makes stands like this, it's kind of hard to say. But now she has something that she can kind of hang her hat on, I guess. And I think she'd probably be looking for ways to do that some more as she decides what she's going to do next, because that time is coming. And Jasmine, we have an election, in a little more than a year, less than a year and a half. It's a year. And a quarter.
A year and a little bit.
And one of the places that there will be an election is the 6th Congressional District in the state of Kentucky.
So the 6th Congressional District, that includes Lexington, so Fayette County, and a lot of those central counties around it, right?
And it kind of, the entire district shifted east slightly into some territory. Central Kentucky tends to be the most liberal area in the state, you know, includes Louisville and Lexington, and that whole 64 corridor is pretty liberal. And as they shifted it a little bit further to the east, even though a lot of the people out there have been historically Democratic, they have started to vote more and more Republican, or in the recent past. So this year, in the 6th Congressional District, there's a little bit of fatigue. I will say there's been some fatigue for a while. Ever since Ben Chandler lost, Andy Barr hasn't really drawn a very serious opponent.
Right.
Nancy Jo Kemper ran last time in this seat, but I don't think that she had a lot
before
of...
Before that, it was Elizabeth Jensen.
Yeah.
Right?
And there haven't been a lot of... You know, I don't want to use the word serious because that seems like we're writing off people that worked really hard to run a congressional election. But not a lot of people with some serious party support or people who hadn't been elected to things in the past. But for some reason, and it may be the unpopularity of Donald Trump nationally, or it could be that just... some people's time has come. There's been some interest in who's going to be running as a Democrat in the Kentucky 6th District. At least one Democrat has entered the race, and that is State Senator Reggie Thomas. Reggie Thomas is from the 13th District, which is smack in the middle of Lexington. It's not a very large district for the state Senate, geographically at least, because it's right in the middle of an urban area. And it is it may be the most liberal district in the entire state Senate, because it is like, it includes UK and the surrounding areas.
Downtown.
Yes. Downtown Lexington out to like the Chevy Chase area and like that mm-hmm. whole, like there's a very liberal district. Senator Thomas won this seat in 2013 when Kathy Stein left the legislature to become a judge. Kathy Stein, one of the bulwarks of the Kentucky legislature before she left for the judiciary, she served in Kelly Flood's House seat and then in the state Senate in the 13th district, and was absolutely one of the most brazen and outspoken liberals in the Kentucky legislature. I think her family owns the Lexington Legends, too. So, fun fact about Kathy Stein. But anyway, Senator Thomas has definitely taken up that mantle. He is, according to the W nominate calculations I made about the 2016 Kentucky legislature, he was the fifth most liberal senator in the state Senate. Senator Thomas, in another part of his life, is also a lawyer, and he is a professor at Kentucky State University, which is a historically black college in Frankfort. Okay, so Senator Thomas, as he's running, he will likely face a primary challenge, I think at least one. And one person I've heard lots of people talk about, even though this is kind of weird because she doesn't have much of a public profile, is Lieutenant Colonel Amy McGrath. So Lieutenant Colonel Amy McGrath was the first woman to fly an F-18 in combat during the war in Iraq.
That's pretty cool.
It is very cool. And it got her a place in the Kentucky Aviation Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Yeah. And most of the information I know about here comes from her introduction video to the Kentucky Aviation Hall of Fame, which you can find on YouTube.
Okay.
And it would make a good commercial if she decides to run. So Lieutenant Colonel McGrath has worked in Washington. She was a policy advisor for Representative Susan Davis, who is a Democrat from San Diego, California. She worked on military issues. And she has been connected to Mark Nicholas. Jasmine, do you know what Bluegrass Report is?
No.
Oh, man, Jasmine.
Is this before my time?
This might have been before your time. Like, there was a point, there was a time in the recent past, I would say probably like 2006 to probably like 2009, when Bluegrass Report was like the most important source for political news in Kentucky.
I was still in high school then, so I wasn't really paying a lot of attention.
Yeah, there were people, you would walk around in Frankfort and people would just, every computer in Frankfort had it up. And it was like a real ugly website. It was like navy blue and like dark red. It looked real bad. But people would be reading that thing everywhere. And I would hear stories about, like, you know, state elected officials that, like, making sure their name got in there every once in a while. And it was a big deal. And Mark Nicholas was the publisher of that website. And he I would say him and Greg Stumbo were the people who were most responsible for Ernie Fletcher being a single term governor in the state of Kentucky. Mark Nicholas also helped Ben Chandler win his seat in the 6th District after he lost the gubernatorial election in 2003, so he's familiar with this district. Lieutenant Colonel McGrath is the candidate, I guess, who he's been connected to. I think he's probably one of the reasons that this candidate has been in the news so much, despite being, you know, a military officer without much, you know, experience in Kentucky politics, yet a lot of people are talking about her all the time, at least as far as I can tell. So we have Reggie Thomas and we have Lieutenant Colonel Amy McGrath, who are potential probably people who are running, and Senator Thomas, who definitely is running. And then we have lots of other people who are being mentioned. So former state representative Leslie Combs.
Right. She did not run for reelection for her state House seat. Uh-huh. And I believe a Republican took that seat,
yes,
right?
Yes, that is absolutely what happened. She bowed out. And the seat was taken by a Republican. But she is, I don't know if she's the daughter, I think she's the granddaughter of Bert T. Combs, who is my favorite Kentucky governor of all time. But, Leslie Combs was, a representative. She's not from Lexington. She's from east of Lexington. So she could have an advantage with some of the voters out there. And also people have mentioned Jim Gray, the Lexington mayor who recently ran for U.S. Senate and lost to Rand Paul. And also people have mentioned Allison Lundergan Grimes as a potential candidate, even though that seems to be more of an outside shot, and I think she probably will want to run for something statewide. So I don't know. It's been kind of interesting that so many people are interested in running for this office, since Andy Barr seems to have won pretty comfortably each of the times he's run, and the district seems to have swung to the right pretty substantially, mostly around the issues related to coal mining. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Do you think these candidates stand a chance if they run against Andy Barr?
I honestly don't know. I don't think anyone saw Andy Barr coming.
Right. No, they definitely didn't. And he got elected in the Tea Party wave. like the big, right. you know, people started decided they didn't like Barack Obama a lot. I would say around, was it 2010 when he first won?
I think he lost by a small margin in 2010 and then won in 2012.
Right. So he won in 2012.
And in 2014 and 2016, no one really came close to beating him. So yeah. Well, I don't know.
I would say that in the pantheon, in the six congressional districts in Kentucky, the sixth is the only one that is even a little bit competitive. And I think that this will be a big year for Democrats nationally. I think that they're poised to pick up seats. And the question isn't whether or not they're going to pick up seats, but whether they'll pick up enough to become a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. And I think that if there's going to be a wave, and if they're going to pick up 50 or 60 seats like the Republicans did in 2010, Kentucky 6th is one of the places. Kentucky 6th, along with Indiana 9, which has picked up a very serious challenger in Dan Cannon, who is friends with people in this building that we're sitting in right now. Those are the types of districts that will get swept up if there's a big wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important that somebody runs. And I think these seem like two very high-quality candidates. I know Reggie Thomas is very serious. Lieutenant Colonel McGrath seems like a very serious candidate, so it's good that if they do run that they got somebody who's for real that's doing that.
Okay. Not that the others weren't.
No, they aren't. They know. Weren't. Yeah. Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Yes.
All right. Okay. So, Jasmine, the new Omni Hotel in Louisville reported that two conventions pulled out of negotiations as a result of the California travel ban that you and Andrew discussed 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
Yeah, so Mayor Fisher had a small rally, and he called the announcement, quote, proof that the travel ban is a real threat to our growing tourism economy. So it seems like the mayor is going to lead a push to try to get the law repealed the next session. We'll see what happens there. Next, on the same day that the law limiting medical lawsuits in Kentucky went into effect, a lawsuit was filed challenging it. So we've talked about this before. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about how these panels are formed and how they're going to work after this bill is passed, but maybe they won't go into effect. So the court case is about a woman named Tanya Claycomb of Breckinridge County, and Ms. Claycomb is the mother of a child with brain damage and cerebral palsy, and her suit claims that she is denied the right to file a claim. It's suspected by Senator Ralph Alvarado, who's the chief sponsor of this law, that the Kentucky Justice Association, which is a group that supports trial lawyers, is behind the case. The people filing the petition have denied that. I may be on Senator Alvarado's side on this one, that it is the trial lawyers that are doing this. But we will see what happens on the merits of the case as these things evolve. And then lastly, Bernie Sanders visited the state on Sunday for a rally opposing the U.S. Senate's health care reform bill. He was in Covington, and we will transition now to a short interview I did with Brandon Mims about that event. Okay, well, now we have an interview with Brandon Mims, who is a human rights commissioner from the city of Covington in northern Kentucky. Brandon, thanks for being on with us. We really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity, Robert.
Yeah, it's great to talk to somebody who was at this rally in northern Kentucky on Sunday. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about it? How was Senator Sanders? How did the crowd react to him? What did he have to say?
It was actually awesome. Everybody just came in. Everybody was being respectful of each other. The energy was high. We were playing good music. Our mayor, Joe Meyer, showed up. He gave his speech. It energized the crowd, just letting everybody know that the city of Covington is not a pretentious city. We are a very open-minded and progressive city. We have our mixture of Democrats and Republicans, Libertarians, Independents. And we all like to be able to work together and try to make the city better and, you know, and by extension, try to make Kentucky better.
Tell us a little bit about what Senator Sanders had to say. I'm assuming he was opposed to the health care bill that's in front of the Senate in Washington, D.C. right now. But did he have any specific things that he said about the bill in particular?
He was just pretty much stating, like, various organizations were completely against it. The AARP, American Medical Association, American Hospital Associations, the American Cancer Society, and various other organizations, you know, concerning, medical care were actually against the program, and America's against this.
Sure.
Is against this health care program that Mitch McConnell is proposing. And definitely people in Kentucky are.
And tell us a little bit about the crowd that was there. Were they? Do you suspect that most of them were people who might have voted for Senator Sanders in the primary in the 2016 presidential election? Or was it a big mixture of all types of different people? Or, you know, was it just strong Democrats who were opposed to the health care bill? Or who was there?
Those who were there were a mixture of Democrats and independents who voted for Bernie Sanders. There were some Democrats who were there who didn't vote for Bernie, but they also were the ones who also helped bring Bernie to Covington for the rally.
Yeah,
I'm one of the Democrats who are pro-Bernie and also for progressive values. I was there, and I was very happy to see that he was there. We had over 1,000 people, probably close to about 2,000. The room was actually, the maximum capacity was 2,500. And from where I stood, which was actually directly behind Senator Sanders, the room was actually almost full.
Okay, well, that sounds like it was a really cool event and really great. I know that a lot of people have mentioned or have looked at Northern Kentucky as a place that has a lot of Republicans representing it, both in the United States Congress, but also in both the Kentucky House of Representatives and the Kentucky Senate. Do you see the group of Senator Sanders supporters coming out and maybe trying to, you know, have some people that are running for office up there or would be supportive of Democratic House and Senate candidates? Do you see that as a political force to be reckoned with in the next election in 2018?
I don't see that as a horse to deal with any election involving Kentucky. I'm not an actual born resident of Kentucky. I moved over here in 2009. I'm getting assimilated to the political life in Kentucky. And there's just things that the Democrats here need to actually follow the values at which Democrats are, because we still have to deal with the old Democrats who technically by now should have flipped Republican. But they're still wanting to hold on to the fact that they're Democrats.
Okay. Well, I mean, it sounds like it was a really great event. You know, it sounded like it was a really cool speech. What were you doing on the stage? What's your connection to Senator Sanders, and how did you get connected with everybody that was there?
Well, the reason I actually got up there is because actually I was helping out with the crowd, and then it was a last-minute volunteer thing. I was standing in line for to get in, and then they asked for volunteers, and I volunteered, and then I was helping out with the crowd inside the convention hall, and one of the people from Our Revolutions just looked at me and just told me to come with them, and they pulled us outside to the hallway section of the convention center and told us we're going to stand behind Mr. Sanders, and we're just like, sure, we'll do it.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. All right, well, it sounded like it was a really good event, and it sounded like there was a lot of stuff there, and we're glad that Senator Sanders came to visit us here in Kentucky. Anything you'd like to add, Brandon?
Actually, I'm hoping Bernie runs again for 2020. If not, may the Democrats get through their thick head and actually get a progressive candidate that'll run instead of somebody who's Republican-like, because that's not what we need, and that causes to have Governor Bevin be in office, and we're just like, in my opinion, enough's enough.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we hope to talk to you again soon when we have some more news from Northern Kentucky. Thank you very much, Brandon.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
Yep. Jasmine, wasn't that a great interview?
Yeah, that was great.
That's a lie. You didn't listen to it. You haven't heard it yet. We're recording this. I recorded the interview with Mr. Mims earlier.
I'm sure it's going to be great.
Jasmine's going to listen to it later. It's going to be good. But yeah, that brings us to the end of our show. Jasmine, tell people how they can get in touch with us.
They can get in touch with us on Twitter. We have an account, My Old KY Pod. We also have a Facebook page that you can like. Robert posts our show notes on Medium, and you can find our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to us, and we will see you next week. And